Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Danny from Riverdale, Bronx, and you're listening to Soundcheck from WNYC.
And I'm so glad, I am glad. I'm tired of weeping.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Fans of the blues all know the legend of Robert Johnson going down to the crossroads to sell his soul to the devil. But do you know about the legend of the treasure trove of great blues recordings under the Milwaukee River? The story goes that when the great blues label Paramount Records collapsed in 1932, angry workers threw the metal masters into the river, forever tempting the most devout scuba-clad record collectors out there. Joining me in the Soundcheck studios now is Dean Blackwood, co-founder of Revenant Records. He's teamed up with Jack White to release a big two-volume box set containing thousands of long-lost Paramount recordings. The box set is called The Rise and Fall of Paramount Records. Volume 2 comes out on November 18th. Dean, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
I'm assuming none of these were fished out of the Milwaukee River.
As far as history detectives tells us, no, they weren't able to find any.
So before we get into the myth and the reality of Paramount Records, pick a track from this enormous set that you've put together that for you kind of crystallizes why this is important.
Well, there's definitely some known quantities in among Paramount. You mentioned the Mississippi Delta, the sort of kingpin of Delta blues.
Well, we heard a little Skip James coming
right,
in.
Right, a little Skip James, Charlie Patton,
right.
your son House. But so, I would pick Lottie Kimbrough, sort of an obscure, one of these obscurities from Kansas City area. And I'd probably go with Rolling Log Blues. She's really a marvelous singer. It's strange that we don't know about her, based on her sheer output.
I've been drifting and rolling along the road, looking for my room and board. Like a log, I've been jammed on the bank, so hungry, I'm feeling and lame. Get me a pick and shovel, dig down in the ground, gonna keep on digging till the blues come down.
A little bit of the Rolling Log Blues from one Lottie Kimbrough, one of the hidden gems uncovered in the new box set out on November 18th called The Rise and Fall of Paramount Records, Volume 2. Volume 1 dealt with the mid-20s. Volume 2 is the late 20s, early 30s, up until the fall of Paramount Records in 1932. Dean Blackwood, the co-founder of Revenant Records, which is releasing this along with Jack White's Third Man Records, is here with me on Soundcheck. So the rise of Paramount. People will be surprised to hear that Paramount Records was, in fact, an arm of the Wisconsin Chair Company. But this was not uncommon back in the 20s, right?
Right. I mean, most of these companies, like Paramount, got into the record business solely to sell something else. They
usually record players.
Yeah, record players. They wanted to sell their furniture line. In this case, Wisconsin Chair Company had done some contract manufacturing for Edison. Thomas Edison, when his factory burned down in Orange, New Jersey, he was looking for a place that could scale to his size of operation to make these phonograph cabinets that he'd been making. He got the Wisconsin Chair Company to do this right off of Lake Michigan there in Port Washington, Wisconsin. And they decided, this isn't that hard. We can make these. And then, we should make some records, too.
Yeah.
And so from 1917 to 1922, They made records that no one really cared to listen to. They assumed that it didn't really matter as long as, you know, you were producing some sort of content. It was really about the technology. It was about demonstrating for your friends the ability to play your records.
When CDs came out, there was a band called Flim and the BBs, which no one remembers except for the people who sold CD players, because Flim and the BBs was released on a CD simply right. so that you would have something to play right. on your CD player.
Right. It's the natural evolution of a new technology. Initially, it's about the technology, and then eventually it becomes about the content. And
right.
that was where Paramount got it wrong for about 5 years. Beginning in 1922, they started getting it right.
What was the change? What did they start doing right?
Well, they embarked on what at the time was called race records, the practice of recording black performers and producing records for black audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you had was a company that was willing to take risks. They wanted to do things on the cheap. They were hoping to find an audience that didn't care that much about the quality of the product, the actual sound quality. Mm. They had notoriously bad-sounding records. They had no-name artists. They had bad-sounding records.
What
could possibly go wrong? And they just happened to, partly because of their, you know, they were interested in cheapness and expediency, and so they ended up with kind of the lion's share of these early jazz and blues artists because of their essentially an open door recording policy.
And as you say, Dean, you know, they didn't much care who the performers were, or how good they sounded, but in among the tuna were a few dolphins, you know, Patton
right.
was one of the people that they kind of fished in, you know, brought into the studio, made recordings with. And here we have now one of the acknowledged masters of
right.
what's come to be known as country blues or Delta blues.
Right, really a generation earlier than, you know, most people, if they know of a Mississippi Delta blues artist, it's Robert Johnson. But, you know, Patton and his ilk were really a generation earlier and really served as the, you know, the foundation for you know, later 30s performers like Robert Johnson, and were a big influence on them.
And in the box set, The Rise and Fall of Paramount Records, Volume 2, which begins in 1928, we hear this Charlie Patton classic, which refers back to the flood of the previous year. Yeah.
Right.
It's called High Water Everywhere, Part 1.
The bad water done rolls around some now. Show me down that line. Bad water done rolls around. And I tell that water, water, don't jump through this town. Lord, that whole round country, Lord, quiver is overflow. Lord, that whole round country, man, is overflow.
You know, I can't see him.
I was going to the hill country, but it got me back. Now look at me, I'm now leaving, still while rising high.
That is now considered one of the classic recordings of the Delta Blues, Charlie Patton's High Water Everywhere, Part 1. But when it was recorded, he was an unknown guy who was just part of this. I mean, it must have just been like, you know, like a sausage factory. Get him in, record them, get him out.
Yeah, there was really, they were one of the few labels that didn't require test recordings of their artists. And so that was another reason that unwittingly they tapped into this, you know, incredibly rich, you know, vein of these early vernacular musics in America.
Was it up to the musicians to get from wherever they lived up to Wisconsin, or did they go to them?
There were some scouts in key locations, it turned out, although no one knew that at the time, right? In Mississippi, in Alabama, in Dallas, that's where, you know, a store owner there found Blind Lemon Jefferson, who had developed a big following on the streets in Dallas. And typically, you'd have a sponsor, you know, you'd have someone essentially on behalf of Paramount providing a ticket, a train ticket, to Wisconsin.
We're speaking with Dean Blackwood. He's co-founder of Revenant Records with the late guitarist John Fahey, who was a huge Charlie Patton fan. And the new box set coming out on Revenant Records in association with Jack White's label, Third Man Records, is called The Rise and Fall of Paramount Records, Volume 2. Volume 1 took us through the mid-20s, and it was 800-some-odd songs?
Right. There's 800 digital songs on each volume, and then a subset of those is contained across six LPs in each set as well.
Okay. So it is an enormous undertaking. And the second volume out on November 18th charts the final years of Paramount Records from 1928 to 1932. So they've got all these people coming in. Lots of them are just local, regional talents, and they, you know, they cut a couple of sides and then they go on their way and nobody really cares. But you do have Blind Lemon Jefferson. You do have Ma Rainey and Charlie Patton and, you know, King Oliver and people who turn out to be giants.
Right.
And you know, important to say that white people were buying those records too, right, at that point.
White people were, particularly the jazz records. I think the as you get into the later 20s, as they start to record more, you know, Blind Lemon Jefferson was really the signal in 1926 that there was a market for a solo vocalist with guitar playing the blues. That really, the market hadn't really been identified for that, but they had mostly focused on female blues singers, you know, up to that point. Mamie Smith, who had recorded Crazy Blues in 1920 for OK, that was a huge hit. And then, of course, you had many other female recording artists, but it was Jefferson in 26 that signaled, hey, something different is different here. And that really was an exclusively black audience, you know, for these solo guitar blues songs. But he was the first real superstar in this vein.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of Blind Lemon Jefferson, because the song "See That My Grave Is Kept Clean" will be familiar to Bob Dylan fans. Dylan, right. A huge fan of Blind Lemon Jefferson, and this is from the second volume of The Rise and Fall of Paramount Records, out on November 18th.
Only one kind favor I ask of you. Only one kind favor I ask of you. Lord, it's one kind favor I ask of you. See that my grave is kept clean. It's a long way, got no end. It's a long lane that's got no end. It's a long lane, ain't got no end. There's a bad wind that never changed. All it do but hold it in a line. All it do but hold it in a line. Well, it do.
Blind Lemon Jefferson, "See That My Grave Is Kept Clean," a pretty well-known song from this old bluesman, which appears on the new box set, The Rise and Fall of Paramount Records, Volume 2, 1928 to 1932, another 800 songs from the record company catalog. And Dean, there is the story of, you know, the fall of Paramount Records. They go out of business. Why? I mean, when they're recording all of these gems, what happened?
Yeah, probably nothing too special. You know, they weren't equipped to ride out the Depression. I mean, 1932, you know, you're deep in the heart of it. You know, they didn't have reserves to draw upon like a company like RCA Victor had, or Columbia. You know, if you look at some of these, you know, there's a few of these companies that are, you know, still around in some form today. Those are the ones who, you know, were able to ride out that particular storm.
So they end up selling their masters, which are for scrap metal.
Yeah, right, exactly. They should never be confused with any kind of preservationist body.
Yeah.
This stuff was fleeting, to them. It was moving widgets. It was what would sell this week. They had They wouldn't even have deigned to dream that anyone would be talking about them in 100 years as some sort of purveyors of culture. You know, that wasn't a goal, wasn't an aim, and certainly wasn't any kind of dream that they had. And so, when you know the ability to produce records this week became challenged, well, they just went back to their furniture business and closed up shop on the records.
And so there's been this kind of long-lasting legend of, you know, a trove of blues and early jazz recordings lying in the silt at the bottom of the Milwaukee River.
Right.
And, you know, Amanda Petrusich, who's been on our show recently,
right.
We talked about donning scuba gear and, you know,
right.
People do this.
That's right. That's
but
right.
No one's actually found anything.
No. You know, it seems unlikely at this point. That there would be anything to be found. I love the myth of it. You know that you would have you know even things like the records are you know would probably be long gone. But in theory, you could have metal you know masters, the actual stampers that were used to make records, or the original mothers that they. You know, sort of the metal versions mm-hmm. of the records themselves.
Except that that's the stuff that was worth something because it was metal. So
exactly.
That's the stuff that would have been sold off.
Would have been sold off, right?
Yeah.
So it becomes increasingly unlikely.
So where did you find another 800 songs and, you know, how did you make them listenable?
Yeah, well, we had, it's a huge team and you know, key in that are Chris King, who is both a collector and probably one of the, you know, I would say one of the leading, 78 mastering engineers. He's just very good at, you know, a lot of this is, there is some science, but it's really more art. It's artful listening. It's eking music out of a groove. I mean, he's done things like put his turntable at an angle where he thinks maybe the needle will find more music in one wall of the groove than the other. Things that it's just inventing on the fly how to eke out the sound that is, you know, it's an amazing amount of detail that's encoded in these records. I mean, the real limitations, even in a Paramount record, as bad as it sounds, the limitations are really in the materials that were used, but it doesn't mean the music's not in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And so you have to know when to leave it alone.
Right.
Right.
Well, you know, some of these recordings are super rare. We have talked on Soundcheck in the past a couple of times about Geechee Wiley and The Last Kind Words. You know, there are 3 known copies of the 78. So that's on the set, and actually we'll hear a little bit of that to wrap up. The full box set in its 800-song glory is called The Rise and Fall of Paramount Records, Volume 2, 1928 to 1932, from Jack White's Third Man Records and Dean Blackwood and the late John Fahey's Revenant Records, comes out on November 18th. And Dean, a real pleasure. Thank you very much.
Pleasure's mine. Thanks, John.
The last kind word I hear my dad say, Lord, the last kind word I heard my daddy say, if I die in the German war, I want to send my body, send it to my mother-in-law. Baggy chill. Please don't bear my soul. I thought just leave me out. Let the buzzer see me go. When you see me coming, look across the rich man's field. And if I don't bring you flowers, I'll bring you golden. I looked up at the sun, cried, some train don't come, I'll be some walking done. mama told me just before she died, Lord, said the daughter, don't you be so wild. The Mississippi River, you know it, she's wide. I can't stand right here, be my baby from the other side. What you do to me, baby, it never gets out of me. I mean, I have to close the door.
Soundcheck is a production of WNYC in New York. Find out more about our show at soundcheck.org or just download the new WNYC mobile app. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.